Previously on Improv Sucks.
Wow. So I think for me the journey started, I've always been an art kid, not necessarily a performance kid, but the place that I did do plays and skits was church. And those were insane. But I grew up in that. But I've always wanted to make stuff, and one thing I discovered about myself, and I was going to talk about tonight too, is finding in ourselves where we are most comfortable to make, like that space that's most comfortable, and like knowing yourself, and then getting to that point of not caring what other people think, and you just make because there's something in you that makes you want to, that drives you to do that thing, you know? I've come to think about it as like obsession, you know? It's just like, oh, I'm obsessed with like a whole bunch of things.
Yeah.
And I have to make in order to like keep my brain together. And when I stop, then I start to like lose it. It's like a way for the pieces to come back together and to unload and solidify a thought or a whole bunch of feelings, and then let it go and then move on. But like I found that ever since I was a teenager, I needed to do that to stay sane.
That's so interesting that like you're like, there are so many layers to needing to find like the place that you're most comfortable to make, but also knowing that making is what makes you most comfortable.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
How that is maybe your space, like,
Yeah, and like with visual work, I always found like that I had to, you want to make things that don't exist that you want to see exist.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe they do exist, but you haven't seen it, and then I just have to make it come to fruition. So the reason, and then like I'm gonna dovetail into comedy and performance.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing, like, I was in the visual arts scene here for over 20 years.
Damn.
Since I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I am 42 right now. But I think I started here like 18 or 19. I was like showing work and making work with friends and whatever. But I kind of got tired of doing house shows,
because
you would spend, say, like 100 hours on a painting or a piece. Maybe 100 people would see the work, and then it was gone. Like, no one wanted to, you weren't going to put that in the next show because it would be a different theme, it would whatever.
Also, house shows, something that I think plays into improv too, is like, that's the same audience every time too. Like,
yeah.
You're showing it to the same people, and you don't want to like let them down.
But I think with improv, what's nice is it changes.
Sure,
it's different. It sucks, but it changes. No,
that's true.
Yeah. But it changes, and it can vary. And with performance and stand up, I like that, you know, people will see you at an open mic, and that's you hanging out with people in the studio, and they're seeing kind of this like formless thing that you're working on.
Yeah.
So you're hanging out in the studio, and even if you do a show, they're seeing like a bit more of like a cleaned up version of what you're working on, but even that might not be done yet. Mm-hmm. So I like that it can keep having an audience and new eyeballs and the response is
it really blows my mind,
you know. So I like that. And but the test is also just so
wait, do you take a picture of everyone?
It's like, oh,
no!
It's okay, I'm adding that.
I know.
That's
it's
good.
2020, January 2020. There's a new edition.
Also,
it's a photo documentation of every single person that's been through the mixer.
Well, I mean,
you're pretty good about. I know I've had spurts where I've taken photos of it all in action.
I made something new. It's kind of like the difference between like something written and something.
There's like a backlog.
If it didn't go over well,
probably
like
5 years of one Kevin.
Yeah, like you know, like you know internally that this is a thing I love.
Like whoever was hosting, how many people were there.
I think the difference. Archiving is that it's very hard.
They're both personal.
Yeah, because there's a point where you're like, this is for this,
is just
but
you.
Then
there's no
exactly,
team.
And then you
but with visual art,
find
sort of
that
like,
you're gonna need that archive.
You know, I
well,
this painting in a show, and I heard people talking about the
work.
They didn't know that when I made it, and they were just
but
like,
it's like
breaking
like
down saying,
"Why
didn't work?
It's
all
work,
and it
kind of
got filtered,
but
it could
the
also
blow
take
was
less
like
thing because it was hitting the painting, you know.
Sure,
but
yeah.
But
when you're doing
stand-up
you're
doing improv,
oh my gosh, I'll
feel it all
yeah,
right
coming
there.
Upon tax.
Sometimes
oh,
it's,
oh,
it's just
like
it's
right.
A
it's
reminder.
Like yeah, right.
It's got
fun
like that
really
feels like being an adult with you.
Oh, adulting is so hard.
Echo. Being a dreamer is so much easier when you're a kid.
So what was it about like life performance?
Chris, launch into it. So what the podcast?
that's a good question. So I don't actually think
what got you into
done
it.
This in my 20s.
What inspired you to like
I think I cared
make
too much about
the leap
what people
into doing it?
I cared too much about
and,
people.
Why
and
Chicago?
Crushed,
is a
like
question
the
question
people
me
have
what
like
we ask
said
people are.
Oh, okay. So
and then
to me, like,
we round it out with why you think improv sucks.
That would have
crushed
the first year. Yeah. But I think I was ready for it, partly because I was a high school teacher, and I was like,
brutal.
Yeah,
oh
and like I'm in front of a critical crowd of teenagers every day, year after year, for over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
These
and
other
also,
open micers? Nothing.
Yeah, right? No, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm like, dude, those kids.
You're not going to harass me?
I was once teaching, and a kid walked up to me and fixed the cuff on my pants because they were uneven.
Right? Oh my god.
In the middle of the
teeth? Yeah, they just
started crying.
Folded it back, folded it up so that it matched, or put it one down. I can't remember which way it went.
God.
But it's just like every day you're in front of this, like.
Yeah.
And then every year is a new crowd.
Yeah.
So, like, all of that. But, like, I quit teaching 4 years ago, and I did feel like I didn't want to lose that ability to stand in front of a critical crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I felt like this was a really good place to do that, a good place to like be researching and then to like give that research and try to figure it out. So that still had that like back and forth. And it's different because in teaching, kids are required to listen to you, right? Like if they don't care, that's one thing. But they still have to listen because they still need that grade.
Right.
So there is like a power dynamic. But in stand-up and improv, no one has to care, right?
Somewhere you still earn them though, don't you?
Yeah.
On both sides,
yes.
In the teaching and in the
I can imagine it feels so good to like win a class, especially a high school class.
Oh
like,
man, when you win them over,
Because you would just have to get so emotionally invested to be like, they don't care at all. They do not care at all. In fact, this is prison to them.
And I have to get them to care. Because I care. Like, this is something valuable to me. And
totally.
How do I make them see that it's worth their time?
And that's is that a daily fight? Or do you win, like a class, you win them over and you win them over for the whole year?
No, it's daily because you're like directing
the
ship, right? Because they might be into it,
but
you could lose them very easily, especially if you look disorganized or the project has fallen apart.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how do you? So that's the improv part. Like, you're constantly improvising in terms of like conversations. And then the other thing is, you have kids that are always into it and kids that are never into it, but you have that full range. And then you have the range of like skill too. So someone who gets it, someone who really has a hard time getting it the whole time, and you have to treat them the same way, sort of. You know, you've got to grade them, but like, there are all these complexities to figuring that out. You know, and then at the same time, it's not like math where it's like you got the answer wrong and there was a specific answer. Teaching art is crazy. Like grading art, because the reality of like doing art is either it really depends on you what you think success is. That could be a job, but that might not be a job, right? That might be something else. But if you think about it in terms of like getting paid, then that's like one level. But if you think about it in terms of, I always approach it as problem solving instead of just like making art. Like, making art feels great, but actually we're solving problems that don't exist yet. So it's like, here's this formless concept, now we're making a thing that comes out of this void, you know?
My dad is an art teacher, and I think that whenever I would see him grading things, and I think a lot of times, like, because he was in a in a particular place where he would have the same kids for 4 years in a row, like at this visual performing arts school. So I think that he was able to be like, I know this kid, and he didn't try. So then that's where like a grade would come in. But otherwise it is fully subjective.
Oh, it's
like,
totally subjective. Like,
you can't be like, this is bad.
Yeah, and you can't teach, like, the thing that would always get to me year after year is there are kids that have all the resources, and there are kids that have none of the resources.
Yeah.
And you can't treat those kids the same.
Mm-mm.
One kid can get to that museum, another kid has to take care of his or her siblings, right? So, like, on the weekend. So, one kid gets driven, another kid has a hard time just even doing public transportation because they don't have that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is really tricky.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk to your dad.
I love
talking to other teachers. Teacher talk is the best.
Yeah. teacher talk.
Yeah,
our
you
next
get
podcast.
It. You know?
Yeah, seriously. Start that one off.
Teacher
talk.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So it was at the divergence when you were like, I'm done with teaching, and then that's when
now
comedy...
you're into comedy?
Yeah,
it was
so
like 4 years ago.
It's just 4 years ago. No, I started writing. I left to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
I had been interviewing students that I talked to that I taught throughout my career, and I was just like retracing like what happened to them.
Mm.
There were specific kids. And I was like, I wanted to follow up on conversations we had.
Mm.
And one of the things I found, like being in one space, is that the conversations that I had with students in like 2002 through 2015, they're kind of like just bouncing around that space every time you're there. It's almost like time is one, it's like all at one time, you know? So I found that great, but also hard.
Yeah.
And so when I left, I had started researching it, doing the research for the book 2 years before I left, but I was just following up on conversations like, oh, when you were a kid, you're 26 now, you know, like you said this, you know, like you were gonna do this. Did you end up doing that? Do you still think this way?
Wow.
And, you know, and I found that that would be the start of our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just kind of trace that and figure out like, oh, how did you become the student that you became? And, things like that. Generally, there were students that I really enjoyed and liked. And, and I was always curious as a teacher, like, what is happening behind the scenes? Like, there's so much that you go through when you're in high school. So it's just like, I was very curious about those stories.
Yeah.
But it was isolating. Writing was very isolating.
Mm.
And I spent my whole career with people. And so I was like, okay, like, I'm just writing in isolation. I need to be around people, like, and
gotta
I need
find
to
a
be
co-working
around
space.
Fun people. And I came into the comedy scene very naive, like thinking, especially the stand-up scene. I thought, man, it's gonna be a whole bunch of like, it's really fun.
Just camaraderie.
Yeah. You just walk in and everyone's like,
everybody's there to have a great
hey,
time.
Yeah, we're joking.
There's fun people.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, my work was like that though. Like, kids have like all this energy. You walk in. They've got a weird thought. We're rolling with that thought, you know?
The class they wanted to be in every day.
Yeah, art,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah, yeah. So then I went into comedy because I needed to be around people. And I was naive, but I was like, I'll hang out here.
Yeah.
Let's just stay.
That's such an extreme, to me, like, conceptually a very extreme group of people to enter, like, to be surrounded. Like, when you're doing improv a lot, they tell you, like, take a break every once in a while. Go, like, talk to normal people.
Yes.
You need to know how real people
right,
interact
right.
because
yeah.
like improvisers are such a specific type of like bits.
Right?
But it is so energizing and so invigorating.
Yeah, and I found like one of the things I did like at Second City when I did improv classes is people were coming from everywhere. It was sort of like, oh, this person's here because their job pay them to be here so that they could move up the their business ladder, right?
Which is
and it's like
insane, like, rungs to
so
have to
weird.
Have.
Yeah. So curious.
Who did it? Yeah.
Right?
Bizarre.
Yeah. It's like, okay, you're going to pay for my classes? Okay, I'll do A through E,
yeah.
right?
Sure.
That's amazing. And then I get a raise and, you know, a bump in my, like, that's crazy. So, but I really enjoyed that because that was, like, such a different mix of people of, like, older and, like, really young and people... And just the comedy scene in general, people not going to college, coming here from small town, or having, you know, I have a friend that taught at Harvard but is in the scene, you know, like there's just like that whole range again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like I love being around that diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we all have like this one goal.
Yes.
You know, which is like get that laugh, and then like people are either like they want to do LA or New York, and that's a very different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are staying, and that's a very different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
You have that divide, you know?
That's true. A lot of different perspectives for like that goal. If we boil it down to that goal of getting a laugh, that makes it so much more fun. Like whenever we talk about goals about like, you know, like moving somewhere or making a Herald team or whatever, those are the ones that really stress me out because I'm like, those are actually
like,
dividers, not
like,
like,
oh, we're shooting for LA. Like,
right.
We're doing this because we need to get to New York or LA.
Scary.
Very different.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, and we got to do this in 4 to 5 years.
There in increments of like 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Really wild.
Yeah, it's cool to find the people that you really connect with who approach the and appreciate the craft of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Above all else.
Yeah.
You know, that the other things will happen as they need to and as they should, and you should put energy into them.
Yes.
You need goals,
right?
I mean, I don't know, as a teacher, when you were teaching all of your students along the way, did you like give them something to shoot for? Did you give them a bullseye?
Yeah, you have an objective,
yeah.
right? So, but the nice thing about that is it ends. Like, the objective is this within this time frame. So we're shooting for this thing, we're trying to get there, and also grades are going to clear out and reset. So you have to end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that discipline of creating this thing, this machine, and trying to fit creativity into a timeline, right?
Smart.
And then it's like, you either have the thing or you don't.
Yeah.
And that part is...
You seem like you thrive, to me, on figuring out how to make a bit a project, almost, when I see you present your your craft, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really delightful. It's such a unique approach, I think.
But I love the time frame. I'm like, oh, 4 minutes. Like, okay, so there's like a 4 minute thing, like that's the show.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you make in that? Like? And that part was really scary at first because it's like, I taught classes that were 90 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
And then I had one class once a week irregularly that was 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very used to like these long spans of time to, like explore a thing, conversations, build a room, you know, build that space and get like a feel. And then having to condense everything into those like small time frames is like, oh, I think you can pull off a lot of different things, and who cares, man? Like, get it as weird as possible.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it can be confusing, but it's just like figuring it out for myself. Like, how do you win people over, a new group of people each time? That's that part's really fun, and it's so hard.
Yeah.
So was there a person that inspired you, or like that you wanted to model yourself after, that you were like, this is going to help me get onto the stage?
Yeah. Or even did you see a show? Like, why comedy? Why this?
Yeah. That's really interesting. So I had a friend that started comedy must have been like doing stand-up in 1999.
Yeah.
And like we would all hang out, we were just in college, and you know, we'd go hang out, watch him at Lincoln Lodge, and you know, do all those things. And I mean, it had always been in my head, and but that was like his thing, but then like years into teaching, I was like, oh, you know, it's really fun. And the other thing that I started doing while teaching is like, I don't have a strong voice. So I had a mic and a speaker, and I would just teach class with a speaker and amplify it. And then that sort of like gave me like this, I'm like, oh yeah, like I feel comfortable with this.
Yeah.
And like,
that's very natural for you.
I can do this. But then I think the big breakthrough was my friend had extra tickets to the Moth. I went to the Moth and they had this theme, and I was like, I think I have one story that fits this theme.
Yeah.
I went with my sister and she's like, oh God, please don't do it. And I was like, I think I can like figure it out. Like, I'll just figure it out in my head right now. Yeah. And so I did that moth, like, mini competition.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I kind of like this.
Yeah.
And then there were some laughs. And once you get, like, you're like, oh,
yeah.
that feels kind of good.
It also is, like, getting that first little laugh, you're like, oh, if I could do that with no plan, how can I optimize this? Yeah.
Yeah, can I get it? Like, can I get that thing? So
a little twist here and a little push there and
very satisfying when you're doing it on accident, like supreme euphoria when you're like doing it on purpose
and
it works.
The bug. It's totally the bug,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then what happened is then I was like, you know, you get your notebooks and you're like, ha ha ha. You know, you start writing it. You're like, oh, this will kill. This is like so funny. And then that first time you go on stage and you do the things you think that you've been working on for a long time and you see no one, everyone absolutely hates that. And you're like, oh, can I ever return? Like, and I feel like if you end up coming back, you're in. Like, you end up doing that a couple times and you're like, oh, this is fun.
It's own type of adrenaline of being like, oh, I absolutely hated that feeling and I hate myself so much. I will do this again.
And why would I say that thing? You know,
yeah.
I tested that thing, you tested the waters, and you're like, okay, let's see if I can pull this back, or maybe it just doesn't work in this group, but like, I gotta see another group. Like, and the hard part though is you see the same comics and the same mics, so you're like, I have no idea. Like, I don't.
Totally.
The other thing was, like, coming into the scene, I really thought, I had this feeling that no one would talk to me ever. Like, maybe 2 years in, like, people were still a bit like, no, I don't want to name you because I'm going to have to kill you and eat you, you know, like that whole farmer thing.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I felt like. I was like, oh no, they think this guy's going to leave. Like this.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I got.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I don't know if I'll. But then sure enough, you meet people that, you know, you vibe with.
Yeah,
and
the same idea.
You make friends. But it was very, very difficult.
You got to see somebody at least a few times, right? At the same spots.
Oh, totally.
I don't know if I would have been. I mean, with improv, I feel like it's much easier because you enter group situations.
And it's a supportive group.
And it has to be.
Yeah.
And if you want it to be good and fun, it has to be, like, supportive for the most part. But, yeah, like, I didn't start doing comedy here without being in school. I was, like, in a situation where it felt much easier to make friends. But
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you were already like an adult with a career.
Yeah.
Going it alone into like open mics.
Yeah. Writing this book and then like, oh, I want to be around people.
Like, even as somebody I remember like exiting high school and being like, oh God, I'm an adult and I'm not going to be able to make any new friends. Like, or I remember being like in high school and being like, I couldn't possibly make a new friend. I haven't done that since like kindergarten.
Yeah, I felt like I was a junior coming into a new high school.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
And everyone
totally
has their crew. Mm. And you're just like, ooh. And you know, there are crews, right?
Absolutely.
So, and I was like, being friendly, but like the way people looked at me, it looked like they're very suspicious of what I wanted from them.
Mm.
I'm like, I don't know. Like, are we competing? Like, what's happening here? I'm not trying to go
anywhere.
You're
trying to steal their jewels.
Yeah. I'm just, not a fun time. But I mean, since then I've met so many, you know, you meet so many great people and you realize that there's so much tension at a mic, like people are trying new stuff and you start to understand that, like, oh, they're running stuff through their heads, they want it to go well. You know, I'd hear people at one mic, a guy's like, man, my whole weekend's gonna be ruined, like I just bombed this last mic, bomb this one, I don't know what I'm gonna do with myself. You know, you'll hear that, like the stress and weight that people put on themselves. And you're like, oh, okay, that makes it so hard to interact, and you feel self-conscious. Like, are people gonna, you know, just all of that is on you. So,
I know I've let a bummer, like, or a bad set or something that I didn't feel great about what I put up get me down throughout the night.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's also affected, like, how I treat other people. Like,
right?
For sure. If I feel like I did bad, I will be way more defensive and, like, like, I'll be way less likely to, like, engage with people I don't really know very well because I'm like, you think I'm so stupid.
Exactly. Like, even though that person's probably totally forgotten what
yeah,
happened.
Yeah, or was like, no, that was fun.
Yeah.
I'm still like,
right?
No, you couldn't possibly.
Because your one glance over, you just see them like this, but
yeah.
Like, maybe they're having a good time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. So, let's transition. We don't have a ton of time before people start showing up. The question we love to ask everybody is, why do you think improv sucks?
I think with improv.
Yes.
yes, go on.
A lot of people that are in the scene, there's a cost to being in. Like, people take classes. So if they've done A through E, that was over $1,000, right?
Yep.
Yes.
So there's like a fee to be in the club. People are fun, groups are fun, but the other thing I think that I liked having a crew. I had a crew called Slaughterhouse Six, but meeting up to practice or like coordinating multiple people versus stand up where it's all on you and you survive and thrive all on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go without a plan, you can go with a plan, but for the most part, you can just leave and go to the thing.
Right.
Right. With improv, it's like, oh, we got to plan the show, everyone's going to show up, shoot, someone's not responding to the like message or the group.
And we can't do it without this person. Everybody must be included.
Yeah, so I think that part is, that part kind of annoyed me.
I think those two concepts go hand in hand about it, like, costing money to do it and not really making money from it. So it's like this balance of being like, well, I do this for pretty much free because I'm not taking classes, so maybe my commitment's a little bit less than this person who, like, this was hard to pay for and now they're like putting a lot of time into it.
Totally.
But then being friends and wanting to do something together can be really tricky because then you're like, one person has way different expectations than the other. And like, nobody's paying you to meet for a rehearsal.
It's
like,
keeping a band together.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
And a band of people who like have full-time jobs in the West Loop. Like it's
right,
a weird,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, that's the vibe. And then like a Second City versus an IO versus an Annoyance, they feel completely different.
Yeah.
But Second City, I love it, but it also does feel like a machine, and it's sort of like you see those buses unload, all those people walk in, and you're like, oh my gosh. And then the other thing they do is you throw a show there, and you can't have the money, but you have to charge. So like, there's that kind of like trickiness, I think.
Yeah, which you don't notice until after a while. Like,
yeah.
At first you're like, a show opportunity, but
right.
Then you're like,
wait
opportunity.
Minute.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, and you have to like, you have to do Second City or IO to gain that status. And I don't know. And also like the planlessness of an improv show, like, man, they can go very flat, right?
Yes.
Very fast, and no one can save each other on stage. That part's hard, but it's like everyone's saving, you're together at least in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that also is like, oh, I don't know. It feels like a cheat sometimes, a comedy cheat.
Yeah.
With stand-up, I love watching someone die on stage with stand-up. It's still so fun to watch. But with the improv team, it's like, no, it's too many people. It's too many people at one time.
Yeah.
Well, and usually the really hard part about watching an improv team bite it is they have to bite it for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a long
bite. We were just talking about
this
because if I'm ever like pulling lights on an improv set, there's like, if I'm looking for like a 15 minute out, there's always a time where I'm like, oh, it's been about 13 minutes. And I'll like check my stopwatch and like, the times where I'm like having fun, I'm like, I'm right. It's usually been like 13, 14 minutes. And I'm like, great, I need to look for an out. And then the other times, it's always like 8 minutes where it's like, that feels like 15.
Like, I need to leave.
And yeah, and like, truly, like that next like 6-7 minutes might be good practice for them. But also, like, anytime I've been struggling on stage, I'm not like, oh, if I just had another 10 minutes, I could really
totally.
Dig myself out of this. I'm much more like, get me out of here, because it feels bad.
it seems like, you know, when a show is going well, that laughter and joy really bends and warps our perception.
Of time,
yes.
Totally. Because,
yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If we can all understand that time doesn't exist,
yes,
then that 15-minute set, like, is just the amount of time that that set is fun for. And I think 15 minutes is a good guess, but sometimes it's, like, four.
4 minutes in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, with stand-up, it's the same. Like,
yeah.
You're like, ooh, man, this is...
Yeah.
Is that, and you, when you see someone go for the first time, and they'll say on stage, like, how long have I been doing?
Yeah.
You know? And the person would be like, 45 seconds.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's how it feels.
Yeah.
It was forever. The void
yeah.
is forever, you know?
It is. Fascinating.
Man, yeah. Improv is so tricky. I feel like, I don't know what the evolution of like improv is, even with like stand-up is changing too, right?
Yeah,
like there's like Julio Torres did a whole stand-up special on like objects, talking about objects
yeah.
and design basically, and stories around that.
Mm-hmm.
With improv, I don't actually know what's changed,
mm-hmm.
like what big things have changed in the scene, like is it spaces or are the forms very different? I don't know that much about it.
I think the delivery method and the editing of it into a final product is probably where a lot of the evolution has occurred. Things like Curb Your Enthusiasm, mumblecore movies, where it's like, I've got most of this figured out, I've got a plot line, or I've got some structure, or maybe I've got some characters and some objectives, and then you really let people, I think it's setting people up to make discoveries, and then editing those discovered moments into the most beautiful thing that you can.
Oh.
I think that's the beating soul
yeah.
for me of a lot of the work is finding
yeah.
always finding something that you didn't think was there, and it comes if you can access it at a much more natural, real place than you could ever hope to access if it was a gifted line.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting because like being part of the scene for 4 years, like that's about as long as I've been here, and I think like I don't know that I've watched anything change drastically, but that would, like, that reminds me of, like, the archiving thing of, like, we don't record improv, and we don't, like, compare it year to year, but it has to be a reflection of, like, culture and what's funny and what's not funny and, you know, who's doing it and how young people are. Like, I do know that in the past 4 or 5 years, like, Columbia College alone has spat out much younger people, like, into, like, I.O. classes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that, like, many 18, 19-year-olds were taking Second City and I.O. classes before, like, their comedy studies program started, and that is a shot in the dark. Like, I have no idea if that's true or
not,
but I do wonder, like, how that affected the scene. Like, how did the way we improvise change when memes got really funny, or when, like, we started making vines? Like, pace had to at least shift when the internet changed.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is, like, the desire for constant content.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like improvisation is really important in terms of, like, idea generation,
mm-hmm.
and that's why so many writers come from the improv scene and they get hired, because it's sort of like, okay, we take this thing and we build on this thing rapidly, right?
Yep.
It's like rapid development, rapid output, and...
Yeah, what's fun about a pickle? Okay,
here we go. Which makes sense. Like, I like improv as a way of, like, idea generation, and in terms of recording, I don't see a lot of improv.
We don't.
But do you generally want to watch the whole thing?
No,
right? And they tell, like, classes will tell you, don't do that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You just don't look at it. Keep moving forward, but like stand-ups, you'll see they record every single set.
Mm-hmm.
Some people watch them, some people don't, but you'll watch to like fix that hand movement, or you know, you'll start refining it. So there might be mini improvisations within the thing, but it's all like planned improvisation, right? It's like the look of improvisation.
Right here is where I'm gonna let myself open up the stitches.
Yeah. people liked when I messed up this word, so maybe I'll mess up this word every time,
you know?
Right?
Right.
Wow. So you're like, yeah, and you're just like, oh, it's like such a trick. Yeah. Like stand-up is, it's totally, it's a different game.
Yeah.
But some people mix, but mixing the two, I really like the hybrid. People that are
sure.
really good at both, where it can go off the rails and they can just ride that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I would love to get there. I thought Second City would get me there.
I'm sure it helped. Like,
it totally helped. Yeah, yeah. It helped be confident with the formlessness of that.
Or even to know, like, that you're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
even a thing to do.
Right, right.
I'm
mm-hmm.
often like, I whenever I step in to coach or direct or teach a workshop or something like that, I'll always refer to like your tool belt or like your fanny pack of moves, ideas,
mm-hmm.
things that you could go to and access when
mm-hmm.
the moment calls for it.
Yeah.
Like these skills, because
yeah.
we're constantly learning skills in the way and the style and we perform.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of what we've talked about today is like coming back to what you said at the very beginning of this. You referred to improv as like research and a study, and I think that that is such an interesting way to like verbalize the way you think about it, and that I think a lot of people probably do have a similar like filter, but they wouldn't define it as that, and I think that that's very fascinating. I don't know, it probably affects how you play a lot.
Oh, totally. And oh, the one thing I did want to mention too with improv is like culturally, like what, it, like as it becomes more diverse,
mm-hmm.
like I feel like the structures have to change too,
mm-hmm.
because it's sort of like Asians in comedy and Asian humor, and like our community reads it differently, right? Like
mm-hmm.
the pacing might be different, or
mm-hmm.
you have all of these different ways of approaching it, and you're taught like one way, and it's sort
mm-hmm.
of like that's this is a structure, but it's like, oh, like maybe that doesn't work for this voice, you know?
Yeah.
And like how do we change that? And like I'm interested in that evolution too, in terms of like how the groups look, and it did seem like all the groups I was around, just like the beginning groups, they did seem pretty diverse. Until you like moved up,
mm-hmm.
right, and then like main stage for a while, right,
yeah.
like
absolutely.
All of that, you're just like, whoa, okay,
hard to see.
The filter like cuts out. I'm like, oh, there are a whole bunch of different people in these classes. And as you moved up, it's like, oh, what happened? And then like the stand-up scene, I also came in naive, thinking that was going to be very diverse, because
mm-hmm.
the school I taught at, for the daytime people, like it was so diverse, like where I was at. And I thought the scene would look like that at night, and then it's like, oh no, you know. So that was very eye-opening, and it was like, how do I translate my experience, my voice, in this crowd?
Yeah,
like,
and in a way that still feels like true to you.
Yeah,
that's
without pandering or just like bending to their will.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like I'm gonna still be me, but I'll just have you learn about me instead.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of whatever preconceptions you have about what my experience is.
Yeah.
Because, once again, you have people coming from, you know, small towns. Maybe they haven't been around, like, diversity, people of color really,
mm-hmm.
you know, interact, those interactions. So it's sort of like you start talking about something, and they're like, huh? Like, and you can see it, like, in their face, like, I don't get any of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a very interesting component of the whole, the comedy scene in general.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch it, you watch specials or
anything,
you know?
It is interesting.
Yeah.
And bad. Can be bad.
Yeah.
Can be very, very fun and good, but
usually
bad.
And because, like, education is about inclusiveness, and you're constantly changing, like, you're watching the zeitgeist change, like, year to year,
mm-hmm.
so you're listening and you're seeing and you're very sensitive to that. So I mean, being in the comedy scene, you're like, oh, okay, that's not here, you know, and you have to just be open. I don't know.
Totally.
Do you find moments where you can comment on it from the stage? Can you call it out directly?
Oh, I don't know. Improv or stand up, anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when you...
I see people challenge it from time to time.
Especially if you're, like, a producer or you are a host of something. Like, you kind of have a little bit of the power.
You're right.
So you can call that out. And, I did that at my mic. It's sort of like, dude, that's so blatantly racist towards Asians, you know? And it's like, I'm the host.
Yeah.
Like, okay, and they, you don't understand that dynamic, but like calling it out and breaking it down, yeah, I think it's still like room for conversation. And also, I'm not really open, like, I'm not one to censor someone. Like, I feel like if someone's saying a thing, they're still trying to figure it out, and maybe it's like rough.
Right.
And mics are a place to test it and to see, like, because you'll learn the lesson, like, oh, it's bouncing back. And there's pushback, and it's like, this isn't, like, I shouldn't say it this way. But I think sometimes you have to, like a kid, you know, a kid does these tests, they get hurt, and it might hurt other people, but you're constantly working together, and that's like the community. So I think I like challenging that, like, I'm open to hearing it. Like, oh, like, what is your take on, like, what I am or what my people are? Like, because it could still be very interesting, like, oh, that's a really interesting worldview, and it's gross, and, you know?
Well, yeah, and also being able to, like, have a space where you can offer feedback. Like, even just going up after another comic and being like, okay, well, I noticed that.
Yeah,
like,
you'll do, yeah, you definitely get to do that.
Because otherwise, like, not hearing a laugh, you know, could not mean anything to that person. They could just be like, okay, well, that person just didn't like it, so I'll keep doing it exactly that way. There's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
But having other comics at a show to be able to be like, what the hell, is probably very helpful for that growth that happens. But,
yeah, and like, you know, I have a friend who sometimes will open and be like, you know, chicks are, or whatever, and then you just feel the room. It's like, oh, he'll learn. Like, he'll
learn.
People don't like that. Like, that that's not reading well, and you'll learn, you know?
Yeah.
And or you're gonna push harder, like, you're gonna find it so that people will laugh at that, but understand it's like just being very, like, conscious of, like, yourself, of your room, and how people are reading that. Like, it's just a painful process.
Totally.
Yeah, and no one's getting paid, so
yeah, there's also that.
And that is absolutely a good one.
Improv Sucks is recorded live every Monday in the heart of Boys Town, Chicago, USA, at The Mixer. The Mixer is a hyper-inclusive improv workshop and jam. Every week, we find some of Chicago's finest performers to teach a workshop and improvise right along with you. Come on by the playground on Monday nights at 8 p.m. to join in on the fun. Many thanks to the people who helped make this show: Morgan for editing and co-hosting, Ian Williams for producing the music. Big props to the Nerdalogs for technical production and website hosting, namely Eric Garneau. Hey, Eric. The show wouldn't be possible without them. All of their shows are supported by great people like yourself on Patreon. Seriously, if you love independent media, consider tossing them a buck a month. If everybody that listened chipped in, they'd be able to support more shows just like this one. Thanks.
Yeah, we have people arriving.
I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Really?
What a no time.